Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. If you spend any time talking to a parent of an infant or small child, the conversation almost inevitably turns to sleep. How much is the child sleeping? Different methods parents are using to get the child to go to sleep and to stay asleep. Co-sleeping is one of the methods that a lot of parents use, although they may not be talking about it. This hour, I'll talk with a co-sleeping parent. We'll also talk about the dangers of co-sleeping and bed sharing with a neonatal nurse specialist. But first, Susan Stewart is here. She's an associate professor of sociology at Iowa State University, and she's just published a book called Co-Sleeping: Parents, Children, and Musical Beds. Hello, Susan.
Hello. It's really great to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And first of all, how did this subject come up? As a sociologist, how did you decide that this was a subject you were going to research?
Well, there's three main reasons. The first thing that struck me was a study reported on the morning news, a Columbia University study. And what they did was they looked at infants who shared a bed with their parents, and then they followed them to when they were toddlers, age 3 to 5. And what the study was about was, does co-sleeping have a negative effect on the social and emotional development, cognitive development of these children? And it did not. There was no effect of co-sleeping. And it struck me as odd that this would be, you know, on the national news, because there's still that assumption that if you co-sleep, you're going to create, you know, spoiled, needy children. And there's no science to back that up. The second thing was just all the attention recently to the importance of sleep to our health and well-being. The National Sleep Foundation calls our lack of sleep and low-quality sleep in the United States a public health epidemic, really. And two-thirds of adults and of large percentage of children have sleep problems on a weekly basis. So it's really important to study sleep. It's associated with obesity, low work productivity, anxiety, you name it. And then finally, my own experience with my daughter and friends of mine, kind of anecdotally, we were sleeping not all the time, not every night, not the whole night, not with all the kids necessarily, with our kids. And what is that about? And I thought, well, this is worthy of investigation.
Well, and as you decided that this was worthy of investigation, you also took a look at other research that had been done. And most of the research that had been done about co-sleeping and bed sharing, and we'll talk about definitions in a couple of minutes, in the United States had been focused on safety, which is important. But that's where the focus of the research had been, right?
Right. And so there is this concern about SIDS, which we'll be talking about. And the
sudden infant death syndrome.
Sudden infant death syndrome. And co-sleeping, well, bed sharing in particular, which co-sleeping is a looser definition. Bed sharing is when you have children in the bed. But there is an increased risk of SIDS, which if you're not bed sharing safely, that is a reality. And I'm not a medical doctor, but the American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend bed sharing. They have revised just last fall their recommendation to promote having your infant sleep in the same room. So room sharing, they think is a good thing. So that is a change.
So, but that's where the focus of the research had been to that point. You decided you wanted to take a more cultural approach, and you didn't find much out there that just looked at this as a cultural phenomenon?
No, not at all. There are a couple of studies about couples, like married couples and their sleep patterns, and differences between men and women. Not surprisingly, women get lower quality sleep and less sleep than do men. But other than that, no. And you know, we tend to think of sleep as a solitary activity. But most people sleep with, a partner And really, sleep happens in a family context. And everyone's sleep affects everyone else's sleep. If you ever had a partner who snores, you know that.
Well, let's talk about definitions before we really dig into this so that we know what we're talking about. Bed sharing is pretty obvious. If you have a child in your bed or more than one child in your bed, that is bed sharing.
And pets. That's
right.
Really common.
Now, co-sleeping, though, that's more than having a child in the room?
Well, co-sleeping, in the way I defined it, is not just bed sharing, but it's children being in the room. It's children coming in the middle of the night. Maybe one child comes in, the other child doesn't. It's parents. I mean, I've had parents in my study who were so afraid of SIDS and the stigma associated with co-sleeping, they would pull a mattress, an air mattress, in the child's room. So to be with the child, so it's not always this everyone piling into the family bed at the beginning of the night. It's a lot more dynamic than that.
All right. So your definition of co-sleeping is pretty broad.
Yes.
And that is parents and children sleeping in the same room in different configurations.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Now, one of the things that you looked at first is the amount of co-sleeping that takes place in the United States as opposed to co-sleeping in other cultures. And tell me what you found.
Well, the research shows we are an anomaly. Two-thirds of people around the world, if not more, co-sleep. They sleep as a family, or children sleep, with the parents. Even in industrialized societies, in Scandinavian countries, in Japan, co-sleeping is the norm. And incidentally, rates of SIDS are lowest in a country like Japan. In other developing countries, poorer countries, it's, might be a matter of space, but it's also a cultural phenomenon where, this is just how things are done. And, the United States, we just don't follow that norm.
So why do you think that is?
Well, that's interesting. We strive as Americans to, move up the social ladder, be middle class, and having a big house and a room for your child, in the 19th century, that became, something that people, wanted. Also, we are very independent people. We think our children should be independent, too. And also, we readily adopt science. And the medical community sort of took over, centuries ago, the process of pregnancy, of birth, and now of parenting. And so there are a lot of experts out there telling us what to do instead of kind of trusting our intuition. And Americans, readily adopt that way of thinking. They want what's best for their kids.
In searching for people that you could interview who were co-sleeping, how did you go about that? Because your sort of anecdotal evidence was telling you that this is more common than popular wisdom might think it is. But how did you find people who were willing to talk to you about it?
Yeah, well, it wasn't hard. I found people very easily. That's why I ended up with 51 participants, which is a lot. I just put notices up in the gym, daycare centers. I put a post up in an attachment parenting group. But interestingly, not even really half of the parents, were of that vein, like the attachment parenting followers with the baby carrying.
Okay, with attachment parenting, co-sleeping is an approach that is very carefully thought about and used to keep the child in close proximity to facilitate attachment. Right. So some people enter, when they're pregnant, they decide that they're going to co-sleep with their child, and this is part of their parenting philosophy. So you found that wasn't necessarily representative of the co-sleepers in your study.
No. Another huge chunk, it just sort of happened. I mean, they had a nursery. One father said, oh, yeah, they bought a crib and it's still out in the garage. They never even put it together. I mean, so.
So you describe these as people who slid into co-sleeping.
That's right. That's the language that I used.
All right. And what were you hoping to discover from these people? Once you had recruited them, mm-hmm. what did you want to find out?
Well, as a qualitative study, I really just wanted to find out what was happening. I study families, but there's a whole third of, you know, a 24-hour day where we don't know what's going on. And there is a lot going on in these families. There's lots of movement. There's lots of, you know, communication. People are up, especially these days when we have sort of a, you know, 24-hour economy, people working split shifts, people, you know, doing all sorts of things when they would normally be sleeping. And so it's a lot more, you know, as I was saying, it's a lot more dynamic period of time. And we just knew very little about it.
And the people that you were looking for, you invited people to participate if they were co-sleeping, actively co-sleeping mm-hmm. with a child or children that were 12 years old or under.
Right. And so, and again, anecdotally, and myself included, I did not sleep with my child when she was an infant. I was afraid, like everyone else. But as she got older, you know, sometimes, not every night, she asked to sleep with me. And I found that to be true. And yeah, I found parents who were, you know, co-sleeping with, you know, tweens. And I didn't go into, you know, parents with teenage children who were co-sleeping. But, again, it wasn't difficult to find these, you know, these parents.
We are going to dig more into the kinds of conversations that you had with people, what you found about co-sleeping from the parents' perspectives, the positive aspects of co-sleeping, the negative aspects of co-sleeping. Again, later on in the hour, we'll also talk about the medical field and how co-sleeping is viewed in the medical field. We'll have a neonatal nurse specialist join us in a few minutes. We'll also have a co-sleeping mother who sleeps with her children who are 6 and 3. She's going to join the conversation in just a couple of minutes as well. And we'd also love to hear from you. What are your experiences? What are your thoughts? What are your concerns? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me right now is Susan Stewart. She is an associate professor of sociology at Iowa State University, and she's the author of Co-Sleeping, Parents, Children, and Musical Beds. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about co-sleeping, room sharing with kids. We're also talking about bed sharing with kids. My guest right now is Susan Stewart. She's an associate professor of sociology at Iowa State University. She's the author of Co-Sleeping, Parents, Children, and Musical Beds. And I also want to bring someone else into the conversation. Christy Johnson is on the line with us. She lives in Iowa City. She is a co-sleeping parent. She sleeps with her children who are 6 and 3. Hello, Christy.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And just a few minutes ago, Susan and I were talking about how some people very consciously choose to co-sleep with their children. Other people tend to slide into co-sleeping with their children. Tell me about your approach.
Sure. You know, I think it started out as a fairly conscious decision, and then it just morphed into something that felt absolutely natural to us. With both kids, when they were infants, they just seemed absolutely so tiny, and it felt like the right thing to do, to have them in bed and be in a place where we could breathe together, sleep together, relax together. I always felt like as they got bigger, that life was this process of the kid running away from you and being able to cuddle up and share bedtime stories and then just sort of naturally fall asleep together felt right to us.
Now, the babies are, of course, tiny, and safety is a big concern of every parent for their child. What did you do to make sure that you felt your child could be safe in this situation?
We started out by doing a whole lot of reading and sort of torturing myself over, is this the right decision? It feels right, but there's so much rhetoric saying it's not. But I found a lot of information saying that there are safer practices for co-sleeping. And one of the most dangerous things that could happen is for a breastfeeding mom to fall asleep in like the rocking chair on the couch with baby on her chest. And I didn't want that to happen, of course. And so we would just do some really simple things in terms of making sure that we had a nice firm mattress. We kept the pillows back from baby. We kept the blankets down at waist level or below waist level. And so really all of the things you hear for crib safety, we just did that in our own bed to make sure that there were no hazards for the kiddo. And then, of course, also avoiding like substances and alcohol or other drugs that might mess with how we sleep.
When you first started co-sleeping with your first child, how long did you think it would last?
I thought, oh, well, you know, by the time they're two, maybe even one, they'll be ready to move out into their own bed. I had no idea how little they still are when they're 1 or 2 years old and how needy a toddler is. We tried for a while allowing our eldest to go into her own bed or encouraging her really to go into her own bed. And found that she would wake up in the middle of the night. She'd come into bed with us anyway, and it was really more disruptive to push her off into her own bed than it was just to really welcome her into the bed. We've had conversations now, including the kids, saying, well, how old do you want to be before you move out into your own bedroom? And they have different answers really every time we ask them. But we feel it out. And we'll feel it out when they feel ready to go. I think we'll fully support them.
Well, and how did you balance having an older child with a new infant? Because, of course, kids are not aware of where they're sleeping, and
right.
There can be danger there.
Right, absolutely. That was actually a kind of scary time to think about in theory, and then less scary once the second baby arrived. So the kids are about 2 years apart in age, and at that time, we thought, okay, we have a king bed, we have plenty of room for mom, dad, and baby in the middle. What do we do with toddler? And so we made room in our bedroom then to put a twin bed on one side of the bed, and we moved the older kiddo off to the twin bed where she could still feel like she was part of the family and not be literally shoved out by the baby. But it would allow us to have the baby in a safe spot where he was flanked by parents on either side, where he wouldn't get squished by a crazy sleeping toddler.
Is this something that you talk to your friends about?
It really depends on the community I'm in, Charity. There's a wonderful local community of mamas who practice attachment parenting types of styles. And so in those communities, I feel absolutely comfortable having conversations with my friends about sleeping arrangements and sharing really how we do it. In other circles where I'm talking with parents I don't know so well or talking with parents who I know have very strong opinions about this, I absolutely don't bring this up. I don't want to open the door to mommy wars or shaming.
How about with your pediatrician?
We have a wonderful pediatrician who understands what we like to talk about and who understands what we don't like to talk about. She will ask us how the kids sleep. She doesn't ask us where the kids sleep. And we went through a lot of pediatricians trying to find the right fit for our family.
You actually left a pediatrician because of this?
Yes, we did.
Can you tell me what happened?
It was a situation where the pediatrician was questioning a lot of our attachment parenting things. I'm also a baby wearer. I am one of those moms that wanders around the farmer's market wearing sandals and the baby up in a wrap on my back or on my front. And so the first doctor we had was fairly strong in her opinions about where, how, and when kids should sleep. And it didn't fit with our family lifestyle. She presented the material from the American Academy of Pediatrics, which I actually found to be relatively poorly cited, at least in the material that's designed for families. And so I found it to be less than compelling. And she engaged in a lot of sort of shaming conversations about how we were a danger to our children and how these types of parenting tactics couldn't happen. And so we very quickly found someone who fit our family's needs better.
Well, Christy, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today.
Mm-hmm, you bet. I'm happy to talk.
Christy Johnson lives in Iowa City. She co-sleeps with her children, who are 6 and 3. And Susan Stewart is still on the line with us, author of Co-Sleeping, Parents, Children, and Musical Beds. And Susan, as we talked about earlier, there are parents who choose co-sleeping. There are parents who slid into co-sleeping. But listening to Christy talk about her relationship with her pediatrician, there was a commonality among a lot of the parents you talked to where they said, we don't talk about how we sleep with our pediatrician. We don't talk about how we sleep with our family or with friends. This is something that people don't advertise.
Absolutely. And Christy's story, she sounded so much like so many of the parents. All the themes that she talked about, I found to be the case for many parents. Most parents I interviewed, unless they were part of a really strong attachment parenting community, and even them, they either lied by omission or simply did not tell the truth about whether or not they were co-sleeping to their doctor, to judgmental friends and in-laws. People are told, doctors, nurses, by some, things are changing, and parents go out and if they intend to do this, they select, doctors and pediatricians who are supportive of, safe co-sleeping. They lie about it.
Interesting. It's very interesting. I want to hear another voice of another parent here. You did interview dads in your study, and we've got a dad on the line.
Yes.
From Des Moines. Hi, Anthony.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for calling. What's your experience?
My experience has been pretty, it's actually been fine. I haven't had any issues. I've got two children, one that's 7 months and the other that's 2. But with co-sleeping, we just kind of did it. We were told a lot about, the dangers of co-sleeping and, SIDS. That was something that was told to us a lot. We had gone to a lot of parenting classes, just to be ready, because when we were, new, we didn't really know anything about childcare. But we had found that co-sleeping is fine. I initially wasn't adjusted to it because I tend to be a wild sleeper somewhat. But as time progressed, I've been more mindful of where, my children are. So I don't, roll over or anything while I'm asleep. But it does help that my girlfriend kind of sleeps in between us. Or she did initially, just as a precautionary measure. She doesn't move much while she's asleep, but otherwise, yeah, it's been fine. Now, we haven't had any issues with co-sleeping. If anything, it helps the children to actually sleep better. My 2-year-old currently sleeps, in a room by herself, but there are sometimes where she'll get up in the middle of the night and come in the room with us, or as we're all getting ready for bed, she prefers to just go straight to our room and, sleep in our bed.
So you see a lot of benefits is what I'm hearing you say, although maybe you were skeptical.
Yes.
At first.
Kind of. But at the same time, I've been used to co-sleeping when I was younger. I did a decent amount of co-sleeping. So did my siblings, and we haven't had any issues with any, SIDS problem.
And do you feel like you benefited from it as a child?
Yes.
So that was something,
I can say that I have.
Yeah, something that you wanted to offer your kids too. So is it something you're calling and talking to us about it, Anthony, but how do you feel about talking about it with friends in your community?
I'm fine with talking about it. I don't really feel the need to keep it a secret. I mean, we're very mindful. We haven't, like I said, we haven't had any issues. Our children are safe. If there is any issues, we know where our children are in the middle of the night. So that's not a concern of ours, you know.
All right. So if you need to get out of the house or something like that, you feel like that may be actually a safety benefit. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us.
No problem.
You're welcome to join the conversation as well, 866-780-9100. Susan, you talked to dads as well as moms. Roughly, dads weren't quite as enthusiastic in your survey as many of the moms about co-sleeping. But I thought it was very interesting that you found that in sleeping arrangements, because you talked specifically about sleeping arrangements with people, and although co-sleeping was a pretty broad definition, you found that, for example, if the child slept in the bed, they most often slept next to the mother, or if they slept in between the parents, the mother would face the child, the father would face away. What else did you find about dads in co-sleeping?
Yeah, and that pattern, the arrangements, that's very common all around the world, that the child sleeps kind of on the mom's side or the dad, you know, is facing away, which is really fascinating. The dads were really funny and real and very interesting. And, you know, a lot of them mirrored the caller in the sense that they hadn't really thought of it. And then once it was starting to happen, they were okay with it. For many families, this was a way for everybody to get good sleep. On the other hand, there are downsides. So if you've ever been bonked in the head, you know, with your child sleeping with you or kicked and shoved and things, then, you know, there are some families that didn't find it as comfortable. But yeah, the dads, I did ask about intimacy. And fortunately, my participants interpreted that as sexual intimacy, which is what I was
meant
looking for. And the dads were less enthusiastic along those lines. But for the most part,
so they felt like this possibly did interfere with their intimacy as a couple.
But one couple, they had a midwife who said, look, I always say this, co-sleepers do it in the kitchen. They find ways, right? And so that's what the couple said. I mean, and the dads in particular, they're like, well, this is temporary. They figure it out. It's, you know, sexual norms are looser and, you know, it's not just at nighttime in bed and, you know, it does affect things, but not on the scale that I think most people would think.
Well, and again, you were talking to parents who weren't necessarily just co-sleeping with infants or toddlers, but older children as well. And a number of the parents were looking for an exit strategy, right?
Oh, yeah. They're like, well, if this is still happening when, you know, my child's going off to college, then we might think it's a problem. And when I asked them about plans, they thought, well, it'll just sort of naturally, you know, happen that the child will go to their own bed. But on the other hand, a large segment of parents, they had made many attempts to get their child to sleep in their own bed. And after, you know, it's a lot of work to try to do that and everybody's exhausted. And so it's just a pattern of, you know, you try and then you sort of stop trying and then you say, okay, when school starts, we're going to really, nip this in the bud. And then that doesn't work. And so, you know, it just sort of happens.
We have this message from Missy. She says, my husband and I have been co-sleepers with our two littles, almost 3 and 14 months. Like most parents, we started out with many misconceptions on how life with children would be. They would, of course, sleep in separate rooms, eat everything put in front of them, and always listen to us. With my older daughter, it started out as a response to breastfeeding. She started in her crib, but I became a walking zombie after waking up every few hours to breastfeed her. We got a co-sleeper that went next to the bed. And we should mention that, we'll talk more about that in a moment, but that's like sort of like a pack and play. With a nice firm surface, it goes next to the bed, so there's not a risk of the child falling in between the bed, but they're not actually in the bed with the child. So she says, we got a co-sleeper that went next to the bed so I could roll over and feed her and then safely go back to sleep. After she outgrew it, however, we just got used to sleeping with her, and it felt natural, like we were one big happy family. It was great until she grew and learned to turn in her sleep. Anyway, it just feels right for us as a family. The kids seem very secure and love waking up with us. While we were afraid of SIDS, we feel we've learned to co-sleep safely. And let's be honest, if my kid makes the slightest movement, I'm awake. I don't tell my pediatrician about it, as they are anti-co-sleeping, but we don't smoke, I'm not under the influence of drugs, and we avoided pillows for the kids for up to a year. As far as intimacy is concerned, we're parents, and we find ways to be creative. Yeah. So we are going to talk. We're going to bring our nurse into the conversation here in about 2 minutes. We're going to talk more about safety and find out more about what you learned, Susan Stewart, from the parents that you talked to in your co-sleeping study. Susan Stewart is the author of the book Co-Sleeping: Parents, Children, and Musical Beds. You're welcome to join our conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPR Talk. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about co-sleeping. My guest is Susan Stewart. She's the author of the new book, Co-Sleeping: Parents, Children, and Musical Beds. She talked with many parents who co-sleep or bed share with their children, talked to them about their experiences, a sociological survey of co-sleeping. And I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now. Penny Smith is a neonatal nurse specialist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. And of course, the medical community is very concerned about how babies sleep. There's been a great deal of research done about that over the years. And one of your jobs, Penny, is to help new parents keep their babies safe. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And now we've heard the official recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatrics talked about briefly, but what are the recommendations that you share?
Well, related to bed sharing, the American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend bed sharing for up to 1 year of age. The highest risk actually is from birth to 6 months. 90% of the SIDS deaths that happen in the first 6 months of life. So if you're going to focus on a high-risk period, that's the period we would like to see the babies not sleeping in the parents' bed. My perspective may be slighted by my experience. I'm a 30-year NICU nurse, and for the last 15 years, I'm working as a nurse consultant for the Iowa Department of Public Health in a perinatal program where we travel, team of physicians and nurses. We travel to all the birthing centers in Iowa, and we do chart reviews. So I see all of the charts. We look at all of the deaths that happen up to 1 year of age. So after 15 years of reviewing charts and horrible cases, we see the EMT records, the paramedics, everything that happens, the medical examiner's reenactment of what happened in the home. That oftentimes is included in the record. And I've joined the state child death review team in the last couple years. So that's a group at the state level of many specialties: law enforcement, social work, medical people, several from the health department, and others in the field that have a stake here that review these sleep-related infant deaths once a year.
Heartbreaking and important work.
It is. And the data from that review team is just this: anywhere from 40, 45, 50 babies per year in Iowa die of sleep-related infant death. And when we look at the data going back from 2004 to 2013, that's the chunk of data I'm looking at in the report that's published by this child death review team and submitted to the governor. In that big group of child-related infant deaths, almost half of those babies were bed-sharing at the time of death. So it is a risk factor. And, you know, I understand, Christy, it sounds like you are well educated in the guidelines. And I think that the American Academy of Pediatrics has lightened up a little bit on that recommendation because they have realized that parents are going to bed share, you know, even when the recommendation says room sharing without bed sharing for the first year of life, there are many families that choose to do this.
Well, and
there's
a
safer way to
do it. There are often incidents where a child falls asleep in the bed with a parent where that wasn't planned. But right. I mean, let's talk about your basic recommendations, because there are really a few key points that you want to make sure people know about safety with their baby. And what are your basics?
Our basics are every hospital visit, in every opportunity with community. We talk about the three big risk factors that we see in the state of Iowa. This is in Johnson County, and this is statewide. And the first one is stuff in the crib. So that's a loose blanket. We really recommend wearable blankets or sleep sacks, nothing loose in the crib, no bumper pads, no toys, no blankets of any kind.
So just a fitted sheet.
Fitted sheet on a crib mattress designed for the crib. So that's a safety approved crib. A pack and play is considered to be safe. That's the play yard is the other word for them. Those are considered to be safe. And bassinets, those are safe. The second big risk factor we see in Iowa is bed sharing. We see it all the time in cases, and definitely at the state level. Many of these are preventable deaths. In other words, the parents woke up and someone was lying on top of the baby. It's overlying. It's entrapment. It's kids getting caught between the bed and a parent or in the bedding, that whole idea of loose bedding and soft a soft sleep surface that is not recommended for infants. That's what you find in most adult beds. So bed sharing is huge. Falling asleep holding your baby. And I've seen some tragic cases in our state and a couple deaths that have actually occurred in the hospital. Someone mentioned the breastfeeding, that you don't want to fall asleep breastfeeding. There was a case in a hospital where a mom fell asleep breastfeeding her baby. Just in the wee hours of the morning, the nurse went in to check on the couplet, found the mom asleep. Her breast had fallen over the baby's face, and the baby had been suffocated. That happened in the hospital. Mm. We see those type of deaths. We see deaths that, again, with overlying and entrapment and soft bedding.
Now, but another major risk factor in the home is if the parents are impaired in some way.
Yes, yes. And the American Academy of Pediatrics recognizes that as well. That's the third most common risk factor that we see in Iowa, drugs and alcohol. If you could get one message out to families, if you're going to party, if you know you're going to be drinking, find a designated parent, someone to take care of your baby who's not impaired, because we see that. When you speak with the medical examiners who go in and do these scene reenactments and interviews with families, many times when they enter these homes, what they find is a very chaotic environment. Bed sharing with parents, with other children. Sometimes there are cribs in the home pushed off to the corner, just filled with a bunch of junk, and the baby's sleeping in bed with someone else when there actually was a crib available to the infant. Drugs and alcohol, definitely the third most common risk factor we see.
Now, one of the things that has come up again and again in this conversation, and Susan found it in her study, is that a lot of people who are co-sleeping and bed sharing with their children don't talk to their pediatrician about it. And there are things you can do. I mean, I mentioned the co-sleeper, and that's a common product that people buy that goes up next to your bed. So if you are intentionally wanting to sleep very close to your child within arm's reach, that is considered to be a safe way to do it. A lot of people are afraid to talk to their doctors about what they want to do. How do you feel about that? I mean, that seems like maybe it shuts down the conversation.
Yeah, that was concerning to hear. It sounds like kind of a culture of silence. If you know there's going to be antagonism or someone disagreeing, that we just don't talk about these things. That's concerning. You know, I want to have these conversations with moms and try to present the evidence that we have in a way that people understand and come to some common ground on this.
Nurses are different, doctors are different, everybody's got a different approach, but do you feel like maybe there needs to be a policy where there is a more open conversation?
Yes. Yes, I agree.
I want to get – we've got a lot of people on the phones, and I want to get back to our conversation, but stay with us. Penny Smith, she is a neonatal nurse specialist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Also, Susan Stewart is here, associate professor of sociology at Iowa State University and the author of Co-Sleeping, Parents, Children, and Musical Beds. And I want to bring Sergey on the line right now. Hello, Sergey.
Hi, Charity. Yeah, my name is Sergey, and I have a more kind of cultural experience. I'm originally from Eastern Europe, and back home, you know, growing up, and it's acceptable. I mean, many cultures, they, you know, it's acceptable to have, you know, your children to sleep with parents. You know, they get better sleep. I think the parents are more rested, and we have a little one. She's four now. But my first experience, because living in the States, my wife, she's American, but I always felt that pressure that, oh, you have to, let, you know, leave your child in the room since the child was born. And there's always that stress as far as that pressure that you have to leave your child and the parents have to sleep separately. So I always found it first difficult for me to, even though, you know, coming from a different culture, kind of get over that pressure, that culture pressure, American pressure that the child has to sleep alone. And of course, there's safety concern, but overall, now that eventually my wife came aboard, and actually she was kind of more like, no, I want our girl to sleep with us. And sometimes I'm a light sleeper, so I might go in different bed and sleep and get good night's sleep. So overall, all of us get a nice, rest or sleep, and I think that culture, like you just discussed, that I think we need to have more conversation about that. Again, taking consideration the safety measures, but I think culturally, that's something that we don't have to be afraid to talk about.
Oh, very interesting. Thanks so much for sharing your perspective, Sergey. And Susan, that's something that you found. You did talk to parents of other cultures. You had Chinese mother or an American mother who had grown up in China, who she had some very strong feelings about this kind of culture, didn't she?
Yeah. So I did interview parents who were Asian and who were from South America, and they were confused about our, you know, way of doing things. And sometimes the parents would come to visit who, you know, everyone sleeps in the same bed. And there, one woman was saying how her mother was offended. She couldn't understand, why don't you have the baby in bed with you? Or why don't, and what is that thing? What is that box, you know, where you've set your baby, and why can't she sleep with me? Because it really, you know, a lot of people from other countries said, yeah, I slept with my grandmother. I slept with my brother. We all, you know, sort of, it was sort of interchangeable.
Right. So a lot of cultural differences there. Sergey brought up something interesting about how he often goes to another bed. You also found that with a lot of your parents, that a lot of parents were not sleeping in the same room.
Correct. So that's why I call the book Musical Beds. It was not uncommon for the parents to sleep separately. So the mom might be sleeping, you know, with the child, and the dad's on the couch or in the guest room or on the floor even. And so one couple, they had twins, and one of the twins would come in and she'd want to sleep with the parents. And then the mom would get squished out and hot. So she'd go in the twins' bed, and then the other girl would wake up, notice the mother was in the room, and then she'd want to sleep with her. And so who knows how they would even end up, you know,
right,
in the morning.
I want to bring another caller into the conversation. Matt is on the line in Des Moines. And Matt, you are a pediatrician.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, great. Thanks for your call. What would you like to say?
Well, for starters, you know, I have so many things I want to say. But first off, I want to say thank you for having this conversation. It's really troubling to me that so many people feel that they can't talk to their doctor or their nurse practitioner about these things. I feel like, you know, we have two groups of really interested people who really want to take care of children that aren't benefiting from each other's experiences, and I think that's heartbreaking.
So do you have an approach that you take with parents to try to open up this conversation?
I think it's difficult. I always try to be as open-minded as I can be because at the end of the day, if I, you know, throw up a wall or tell people that, you know, they're wrong and they just have to accept what I say, they're going to go home and do whatever they want to do anyway.
And so they're not going to tell you about it.
That's correct. That's correct. So for me, I think it's important to kind of do active listening, you know, to not just ask them, what do you do, but why do you do it and what are your concerns and how can we make a plan that seems to meet my, you know, statistical or scientific approach to our SIDS concern, but also meets a lot of your psychosocial and emotional and just kind of practical minute-to-minute parenting concerns.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your perspective. I think that sounds like a perspective that a lot of people would hope that their pediatricians would have. And, I mean, Penny, that I'm sure you see many different doctors with very different approaches to engaging with the parents they work with about this.
Yeah, that's true. And Matt, I would love to have you be the pediatrician for my oldest daughter. We need to find some common ground on this, most definitely.
Susan, we have just a couple of minutes left here, and you talk to people about the positives of co-sleeping. You've talked to people about the negatives of co-sleeping. What was your takeaway from talking with so many different families who are approaching sleep in these different ways? What do you think we have to learn from these families?
Yeah, first, there's no one size fits all. And this conversation has been really great because there's a whole group of parents out there who are co-sleeping and they're reducing the risks by taking all of these precautions. And also, I just, in general, parents don't get a lot of support. And there's a lot of judgment, and we've been talking about this, of parents in all ways, not just respect to co-sleeping, but with, you know, other controversial issues like vaccinations. We don't have parental leave, so parents, you know, they're stressed, they're working, and that's not good for the sleep of children or parents. So I think we need to provide more support, less judgment, and education. And so you could see, you know, from the callers, too, that, you know, the more information and the more, you know, openness we can have with the medical community, you know, that's better for everyone.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for talking with me.
You're welcome. It's really great.
Susan Stewart is an associate professor of sociology at Iowa State University. She is the author of Co-Sleeping, Parents, Children, and Musical Beds. And Penny Smith, we have about 30 seconds left here, but I mean, this is your life's work to communicate with parents and medical professionals about this. What do you encourage people to do if this is a question in their lives?
I think I encourage you to just make that sleep environment as safe as you can. Be educated about what the risk factors are. The NICHD, the Safe to Sleep campaign, formerly the Back to Sleep campaign. If you go to the NICHD website, there's wonderful information there for families, for childcare providers, for healthcare providers, and good evidence so you can educate yourselves on these issues.
Penny Smith, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Penny Smith is a neonatal nurse specialist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Nebbie.